with the Finance and Audit Committee meeting. Can I have a roll call?
Trustee Kerr. Dr. Finney. Trustee Samuels.
Here.
Trustee Scott.
Here.
Trustee Tolliver.
Yes.
Can we verify that the meeting notice was sent?
Yes, they were posted.
And approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Can I get a motion with regard to those minutes?
I move approval.
Can I just get a second of that motion?
I second the motion.
Trustee Kerr.
Present.
Trustee Samuels. Trustee Tolliver.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes. Now, the first item on our agenda, Mr. Meeks, I think you are the first person up. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
I'm going to ask Ted Lennon to come up and to join me. The first thing I want to do is to just go over and give an update on the financials, just a brief summary of our financials, and then I'd like to discuss our cash position, talk about some of the, and then discuss some of the action items, and then introduce the action items. So, I'd like Ted Lennon then to give us a summary overview of the financials.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
I'm Ted Lennon. You should have in your packet the financials. There's a preliminary combined balance sheet. I'll start with that, and it has variance explanations off to the right. This is the standard financial exhibit that we present at the board meetings. And I would start off by with the cash. The cash at for the first quarter FY11, 9/30/10, is higher by $4.6 million. And just a comment, it's due to increased cash in the local income, due to increased tuition rates, I would say. Now, it's a little counterintuitive. Our cash position that we're in now occurs really after these dates. It's in November where we start to really feel the pinch that we had to make extra efforts to get some of our vouchers paid by the comptroller's office. There is a, actually, the other counterintuitive thing, excuse me, is the state receivables. They're actually a little lower here in FY11 compared to FY10. But again, the cash position results later in November. On the bottom here, we have construction deposits, rather. We have higher prepaids from the Convocation Center and the local income in FY10. Looking at the liabilities, there's really just a couple of things to comment on. The bonds payable, and that the $890,000 variance, that's pretty much dictated by the schedule of repayment of the bonds. And the capital leases, we did have a new lease from Hewlett-Packard in FY10, excuse me, in FY11. Sorry, at the end of FY10, which accounts for the higher balance in leases in the first quarter of FY11. So let me move to the preliminary combined statement of revenues and expenditures, which should be the following page. Here, we're a bit stronger than, just to look at the bottom line here, we were actually stronger last year. And the main reason for that is the decrease in the appropriations. Our state appropriations are down approximately $3 million this year. We knew that was coming. We've been talking about budget cuts by the state. So if I go back up here to the top to the, again, I just commented on the appropriations there on the first line, which is due to the reduction of the appropriation from the state. Student tuition and fees are higher by 2.4 million. And that is due, we do have a slight increase in enrollment, and of course we had a tuition increase that became effective for FY11. So the combination of those factors drive up the tuition revenue. Also, under the grants and contracts, we have a 2.9 favorable increase in FY11 over FY10, and that is due to the Pell Awards, which have increased primarily. And there's also this 1.6 million from a textbook and learning materials. That's a grant that was new in this fiscal year. Then as far as other income, at the bottom of the revenue section, we have a decrease in other income this year compared to last year, and that's due to changes in the CRCP program. Then on going into the expenditures, overall, we are higher in expenditures this year compared to last year, but the primary driver of that is from the grant side. And as you know, generally, grant expenditures are matched by grant revenues. So if I look at the academic support line here, there's an increase of 301,000. That's due to increases in the local income and the Alliance for Minority Participation. Right below that, in student services, we see the effect of the Pell Grant increase. Pell doubled in FY11 compared to FY10 for this particular line item, the portion that's charged to student services. Then if we go down to the scholarship and fellowship, there's a decrease here this year compared to the year ago of 214,000. That's due to decreases in the child care, duplicating services, and central stores.
And auxiliary services.
And auxiliary services.
You said scholarship and fellowship.
Sorry.
He said scholarship and fellowship.
I'm sorry. Thank you for that correction. Auxiliary services due to the decreases in child care and duplicating. Then in scholarship and fellowship, we have an increase of 834K, which is primarily due to the increase in the Pell Grant in FY11. So then just to summarize again, the overall bottom line is primarily lower by the $3 million because of the decrease in the state appropriations.
Questions on the financials? If not, I'd like, thank you, Ted. I'd like to pull up and talk a little bit about our cash position. And let me get up because I'd like to, if you'll allow me, I wanted to, still here. I wanted to point out a couple things, let's sort of highlight this a bit. As you know, we had, when we met last time, we had some serious concerns about our cash projections and being able to meet payroll and being able to pay our vendors in a timely manner, and so we developed a program to sort of deal with the problems that we had with the state reimbursing us, with the state not reimbursing us for the dollars that we had already expended. The time we met before, we had not received all of our FY10 appropriations from the state. There was about $2.3 million that we had not received from them. Since that time, we have received the $2.3 million from the state. And beginning with fiscal year 11, we've received no reimbursements for FY11.
to date, with the exception of, and then I'll discuss a little bit of that today, we had not received any FY11 money. We were told that we not to expect to receive any reimbursements from the state at the earliest January of 2011. And so therefore we instituted some cost-cutting measures. We tightened our belts. We looked at cutting back on certain expenditures, trying to maintain our cash flow. At the same time, our goal was to be able to meet the payrolls. In addition to doing that, we had discussions with the state, with the Comptroller's Office, with the Office of Management and Budget, with the Governor's Office concerning our cash position. The President and I met, I think this was last month, I believe. We met with the Governor's Office representative and also with the Office of Management and Budget concerning our cash situation and how dire we needed to receive funds for this fiscal year in order to meet the payrolls up until the end of December and maybe on into January until we start receiving revenue dollars from tuition and fees. They had indicated a desire to assist us and to help us, but there were no assurances that they gave us. So since that time, we have received assistance from them. We received $3.5 million in order to meet the payroll for November, one of our payrolls in November. And that $3.5 million was our MAP dollars for FY11, for this fiscal year. So we did receive that funding. We've been in constant communication and talking with those representatives, and it appears as that it's been paying off. Because as of just this morning, they released an additional $3.5 million. And then let me go to the screen and show you our projections and where we are.
Right, $3.2 million. Okay, can we amplify this a little bit? Because I want you guys to be able to see this if you can. Reimbursement vouchers to the state. They had asked us for, to send them the vouchers so they could begin to assist us in meeting our cash flow needs and release some of the dollars that were owed us for this fiscal year. We have approximately $40 million worth of state appropriations, and the state owes us right now, they owe us almost half of that because we've expended that much and received no reimbursements. This $3.2 million that we just received this morning, we confirmed that it's been released. Well, it's been released. We will receive it. We know that it's in route. We haven't received it yet. It's not in our bank. We are projecting that in discussions with them that they're going to reimburse us roughly about $3.3 million, another $3.3 million by the end of December. These will be enough to meet the payrolls that we need to meet for the month of December. In addition to that, I asked for an additional $3.5 million because what we were told was that what they were doing for us now in assisting us, they had indicated that because we're going to get a new controller around January 8th, they said all bets are off. We can't continue to do this for you. We're not sure if we can still do this for you. That's the Office of Management and Budget. At the point that they said that, this is what they had said that they would assist us with, this $3.3 million here, approximately, for 12/5 and for 12/31 to meet those payrolls. I asked for the additional dollars just as insurance that if all bets are going to be off and you can't offer us any assistance, and we need to be sure then that we're going to meet that payroll in that first payroll in January. So they agreed to accept these funds as well. So, looking at the bottom line, in terms of our projections, if we receive those dollars, and we will receive the dollars here for 12-15, we're going to end up with a positive cash of $4 million to move forward. And again, if they send us, or when they send us the additional dollars for the payroll that will end 12-31, we're going to end up 2.47, about another 2.5 million. Then we move into January. By the 15th, of course, enrollment starts. We'll be able to draw down on some of the loans and some of the financial aid. And plus with the additional 3.5 that I asked for, this is what we're looking at in terms of the cash position, and that should be able to sustain us until we find out what the state's going to do and the Comptroller's Office and the Office of Management and Budget is going to do in terms of financing us for the remainder of the fiscal year. So there's a I have cautious optimism because we still need to see how the financial situation is going to be with the state, how they plan or if they plan to reimburse us, or how they plan on reimbursing us for the remainder of the fiscal year. Because when you look at this, you know, these reimbursements that they're giving us, if you can scroll back up to the reimbursements, give me a total here. $10.3 million. Currently, they owe us about $18 million that we've already expended. Remember, our state appropriation is $40 million. So we need to see. So like other institutions, what we're going to be doing from now until we start receiving more reimbursements, we start living off of the tuition revenue, tuition and fee revenue that we'll be receiving for the spring term. Questions concerning our cash position? Good. Thank you, Chad. There are three action items that that I have. The first action item. The first action item is bond refinancing. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to read the resolution to you. Whereas Chicago State University, the University Board of Trustees, regulations they issued December 2007, Section 4, Administrative Affairs, etc., approval of purchases shall obtain prior to the obligation of financial resources of the universities as follows. Professional service contracts that exceed $100,000 in contingencies, except as specified in paragraph D below, shall require approval by the board. And that whereas clause is in there because what we're feeling is that what we're saying is that it's going to cost us in excess of $100,000 in order to refinance these bonds. And whereas on December 23rd, 1998, the university issued $25,650,000 of auxiliary facilities revenue bonds with an average interest rate of 4.84% to refinance $22,620 of outstanding 1994 series bonds. And whereas Chicago State University desires to refinance its auxiliary service systems revenue bonds series 1998, and whereas interest rates for tax exempt as well as taxable bonds are near historic lows, and whereas the refinancing structure will not extend the life of Chicago State University bonds and is expected to generate an approximate net savings of somewhere between $600,000 and $900,000. And therefore, be it resolved that the board approves the refinancing of Chicago State University Auxiliary Facilities Systems Revenue Bond Series 1998. Thank you. That was my assistant, Aromi.
Thank you.
She brought me a file that I need to load. What I'd like to do is that the refinancing is these bonds, because the interest rates are so low, It will not cost us any additional dollars. It will actually save money for us in terms of that. What I've done here is that this first tab here is just an estimate of the various debt services that we have and the payouts. If you see that, you know, our next debt service payout here is 21-2011, approximately $1.4 million. The refunding of the debt service, if we front load this, and we can spread these savings out, or we can front load it. And if we front load it because of the cash situation that we're faced with, is what I'm suggesting that we do, is that we're looking to save in about close to $600,000 here. And this is a preliminary report, and that was as of November 16th. And as we know, the interest rates, they fluctuate daily. And so whatever firm, if the board so approves this resolution, whatever firm that we receive, we're going to have to do an RFP. And so whatever firm that we do get and approve, you know, the things that we're going to stipulate is that we do not extend the life of the bonds. And that's key, and that whatever savings that we generate, we want to be able to generate those savings up front, as opposed to extending it through the life of the existing bonds. Let me just point out that not all of our Series 1998 bonds will be refinanced. The only ones that, because the others, we've got a fixed term. We've got some bonds here, if you can show me the amortization table. Okay, scroll down. What's highlighted here in blue is what we've already have paid on with the bonds, principal and interest. And so there's no longer outstanding. That's at the tune of, so we left with a balance of approximately $18 billion. That's reflected in the financials as well. But what I wanted to show you here is the amount of bonds to be refinanced, okay, will be in the blue. If you go back up, I'm sorry. All right. The ones that are shaded gray are the ones that we've already expended on. And so the principal balance that we have right now in bonds outstanding is about $18,295,000. This blue portion here are the bonds that were refinanced. What's down here in the yellow, if you can go down, those are the fixed-term bonds. And so those, because they're fixed-term and at an interest rate of 5%, we won't be able to touch. But the ones up here are, these are callable. We've conferred with our legal, who's also conferred with the board counsel, so that we ensured ourselves that we can do this. Because there's no penalties for calling these bonds or refinancing this, you know, these bonds here. And so these are the ones that we're looking at here. So we're only looking at approximately $9.2 million that will be refinanced, that are eligible to be refinanced. So, questions concerning the bond refinance?
Any questions from Mr. Meeks?
I know interest rates are varying, but at what interest rate ballpark are you looking at?
The rate that we're currently looking at is anything close to 4%. And right now, when we did the calculation of the refinancing, the first half, where we generated that, the rate was about 4.3%.
Where are we right now, and what's our interest rate now?
The interest rates on the bonds that we currently have that we're targeting for refinancing is close to 5%.
You got
4.95. That's the average for that series.
And the costs associated with doing this?
The cost that, and well, the reason why I had the $100,000, that there's an estimated cost of, it could cost us anywhere between $100,000 to somewhere a little less than $200,000. And so what I'm showing here,
your projected savings, have you subtracted the cost from that?
Yes, we have. That 595 on that 594 there is a net savings.
Well, everybody's doing it.
Yes, they are.
As long as they're, like you say, sometimes you can't do it because of the way they're structured. Or
that's true.
Investors in the bonds won't let it happen because they'll have a tax liability, but he said there's nothing here to prevent it. So.
That is true.
I don't have any further questions. Are there any further questions? Do we have a motion with regard to the...
I make a motion that we accept, adopt this resolution.
A second motion.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Second resolution that I have that I'd like to present is the pharmacy tuition increase. And I'm going to ask the dean to come up to join me.
Good morning.
Morning.
Before I actually would like to read the resolution, but before I do, let me preface it by saying this. We have a tuition and fee committee, and we met and we discussed the possibility of, you know, we looked at our current tuition and fee schedules. And one of the and this is the result of that meeting. We decided to increase or ask for an increase of tuition increase for the pharmacy. Now, some of you may ask then, well, what about the rest of the university? Why aren't you increasing fees there too? You know, have you looked at that? And yes, we did. We looked at that. And based on what we're projecting that we're going to have an increase in enrollment. I think we're projecting an increase in enrollment of about 4%.
In the pharmacy school?
Not in the pharmacy school. This is for first-time, full-time freshmen mm-hmm. overall. We've been noticing a slight increase in enrollment. And through the efforts of our enrollment management, through the efforts of our marketing, we're pushing to increase our enrollment numbers. So, two ways to receive or to increase your tuition dollars. Really, three, really. You can either increase your tuition rate, you can increase your enrollment, hold your tuition rate constant, and increase your enrollment numbers, thereby generating more revenue, or you can do a combination of both. What we've decided to do for the rest of the university is to hold constant our current tuition rate, because we're going to concentrate on increasing our enrollment numbers, thereby making our tuition rate a little bit more attractive. Because when we looked at our tuition only, we were about, I think we were the sixth highest when we looked at tuition only. And we want to be more affordable. In looking at the Public Agenda Act for the state of Illinois, one of the goals there is to make it affordable for Illinois constituents to be able to get a higher education. We don't know what our other sister institutions will do, but we do know this. We'll find out in the spring, you know, whether or not and how far they decide to increase their tuition rates. So we're anticipating that our position will drop from the higher ranks to the lower ranks in terms of the tuition dollars. And so, as it was stated, we are going to raise our expectations, not our tuition rates. And so that was the approach that the committee took. So, but on that note, because pharmacy is a unique entity within itself, and plus we're supporting the pharmacy program, we're anticipating an increase of 8%, and let me explain why, and it's explained in the resolution why we're doing this. And if you'll allow me, I'll read the resolution. Whereas Chicago State University Board of Trustees Regulations revised December 6, 2011 concerning administrative affairs, Section I, mandatory fees, I guess that's paragraph 94, states mandatory fees are defined as tuition and other fees established by the board, which all students are assessed as a prerequisite for registration unless a waiver or other exemption has been authorized by the board or by statute. Whereas the board shall, from time to time, review and establish tuition rates, and whereas the College of Pharmacy initial pro forma for fiscal years 07 through fiscal year 16 submitted to the University and Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, ACPE, included an annual market-based tuition increase to support the continued establishment of the College of Pharmacy. Address ACPE concerns, it addresses ACP concerns pertaining to the college's financial sustainability and the recovery of university expenditures in the initial stages of the College of Pharmacy's development. And whereas the College of Pharmacy receives only 3.6% of its total revenue directly from state appropriations, and the remaining 96.4% from student tuition. And whereas the average tuition increases for comparable state colleges / schools of pharmacy have ranged from 10 to 12% annually, and for FY12 are projected to range between 8 to 10%. And whereas the president, after review of available data provided by the University Tuition and Fee Committee, which is comprised of appropriate university personnel, students, and other consultations with the vice president, shall present recommendations concerning mandatory tuition and fee increases. The president shall take actions on the board's behalf as are necessary and appropriate to implement mandatory tuition and fee increases approved by the board, and therefore be it resolved that the board approves an 8% tuition increase for the College of Pharmacy effective the fall term 2011, which is fiscal year 2012. We're ready to entertain any questions concerning this resolution.
I have a question. Will lower income students in the pharmacy program who might be receiving any type of financial aid or assistance still be able to handle the financial responsibilities of the pharmacy program? For example, the tuition, the books, and the lab fees that go along with being in the program?
As a part of the packaging of financial aid for student pharmacists, which primarily comes in the forms of loans and such, and that's consistent with the packages across the country at other colleges and schools of pharmacy, that is taken into account. And so once the tuition and fees are established, not only that, but the any cost of living adjustments and so on are included within the packages. And so there should not be a change in terms of their ability to meet the needs.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. Do you have the numbers? It's like $1,200, something like that. 8% increase.
For the year? For the term?
I should have had that number sitting in front of me.
Yes. I don't have that number in front of me either, you know, what that increase would be for the College of Pharmacy. I'm trying to recall.
But while I'm looking, I think it's a good policy to do, as you said, is to try to keep the tuition low and affordable. I think it makes the university more competitive and therefore attract even more students to come. I'm sorry, any college has to take a hit.
Yes, sir. We can, in terms of that dollar amount, we can have that for you before.
$1,600.
For the year.
For the year.
Or $800 per term.
And that takes into account everything you've answered to Trustee Kerr about the books and other fees in the class.
Well, I'll tell you one other initiative that we have going. We're taking a strong look at e-books. And there's a software program that's available called Pharmacy Access, which has a number of the textbooks and other types of information resources that are used in colleges and schools of pharmacy across the country. And so we're doing an assessment right now of how that might potentially impact the cost of the books, not only for what the college itself is using and the information resources for the faculty as well as some of our external faculty, but for the how that might potentially positively impact the students in terms of what they have to purchase. And so ebooks are substantially cheaper than than purchasing the written textbooks, the printed textbooks. So we're looking at this whole picture, and in addition, ultimately, what I mentioned earlier about the development officer and looking to find ways to support financially the growth of the college, all this pulls together. It's like this big master plan, and we do plan in the future to make adjustments on what we're asking the students to pay based on our ability to support the program.
Another question might be, could these students who are suffering this raise, mm-hmm. could they be put first in line for jobs, school jobs? I mean, some way to help support, help to accommodate this raise and help them to pay.
Now, when you say jobs, you mean student employment within the college? Currently, the student employment that we have is based on student tutors. So individuals who are helping to mentor and otherwise reinforce supplemental education within the college. And so if those students indeed fall into the parameters of that, right.
Thank you.
Sure.
One thing I just want taken into consideration, even though the ebooks are, you know, very beneficial, mm-hmm. a lot of those companies have a required access code that you have to purchase, and most of the times those access codes, just to even have access to the system and to the books online, is about $100 per course. So between maybe 87 to 100 or so. Mm-hmm. So I just want that taken into consideration, because if you have a student who might be given three different courses, they might have to purchase $300 just for the access codes to access those, even though physically they're not buying books.
We negotiate unlimited access contracts
okay.
for the entire college.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What is your applicant pool for the available spots in your pharmacy program?
The next class that will be admitted in the fall of 2011 will be 90. At that particular time, we will be at our maximum enrollment of approximately 360 students, and that's dictated by the availability of the practice sites as well as our accreditation ratio in terms of the students outside of the college for their fourth year and the experiential education. And so that's our student number.
I'll rephrase the question.
Okay.
How many applicants do you have for available spots?
Generally about between 700 and 800.
And how many of those are really viable applicants?
It translates into about 350 to 450.
For how many slots?
For the 90 slots.
For the 90
right.
slots.
We bring in approximately, this year we brought in 327 for interviews for that 91, for those 91
so
slots.
I raised that to point out that they're, even with this increased tuition, mm-hmm. you have an abundance of qualified applicants for the 90 spots.
Yes, right. We're still in good shape. Right. Even though across the country there's been a slight dip in the number of students who have, or applicants across the country for colleges and schools of pharmacy due to the economy. But what we've seen here has been consistent. And that's a good thing, because that means that our program is desirable.
But do these students, the ones who are applying, are they aware there'll be an increase?
Yes, they know, right.
Okay.
They know what the tuition and fees would be prior to coming in, right.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a motion with regard to the resolution.
I move that we support the resolution as
it is. I second the motion.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Okay, the final action item that I have also involves the College of Pharmacy, and it involves fees. And let me take off my glasses to read this. Sorry for the small print. Whereas Chicago State University Board of Trustees revised
regulations revised December 6th, et cetera, et cetera. Mandatory fees are defined as tuition and other fees established by the board, which all students are assessed as a prerequisite of registration unless a waiver or other exemption has been authorized by the board or by statute. Whereas the board shall from time to time review and establish tuition rates. The board approves, board approval shall be required to establish or change the amount of any mandatory fee. Whereas no separate fee is currently assessed to support activities for the College of Pharmacy. Pharmacy Student Council, which is the student government association for the College of Pharmacy. And whereas no separate fee is currently assessed to support student program related and retention activities, including limited travel, not directly associated with the professional curriculum. And whereas a fee is needed to support the College of Pharmacy, Pharmacy Student Council, and whereas a review of the associated cost in support of the above programming has resulted in a projected need to assess a $125 annual or $62.50 per semester fee, professional student service fee for all enrolled students in the College of Pharmacy or in the college beginning with the fall term in 2011 or fiscal year 2012. Whereas the president, after review of available data provided by the University Tuition and Fee Committee, which is comprised of appropriate university personnel and students, and after consultation with the vice president, shall present recommendations concerning mandatory tuition and fee increases. The president shall take actions on the board's behalf as are necessary and appropriate to implement mandatory tuition and fee increases approved by the board, and therefore be it resolved that the board approves the College of Pharmacy's pharmacy request to assess $125 annual professional student service fee effective the fall term 2011.
Are there any questions about the resolution?
Yes. Can you explain what a professional student service fee is? What does that entail?
Okay, absolutely. Consistent with colleges and schools of pharmacy across the country, the Pharmacy Student Council, or the government arm of colleges and schools of pharmacy, which also is pretty much dictated from an accreditation perspective as well, where the student government has an active and hands-on component of the college's growth and development, then funds need to be available in order to support those initiatives because they aren't curriculum related, meaning not delivering, you know, courses and so on. And also, you in public universities cannot necessarily use state appropriated funds to support those types of things. So as an example, we have a number of community building activities, service projects, community programs. There's travel involved with that. There's also some other additional components to it. There are interprofessional student activities and collaborations. There's professional advocacy. There's professionalism activities that the student government supports, such as etiquette programs and other things to allow the students to be not only more competitive in terms of jobs in the future and currently, but also to position themselves well for leadership positions within the profession and also in the community and the healthcare environment. It provides seed money as well to assist the governmental arm in raising funds to support those activities and so on. So within our projections, we did a cost analysis to see indeed now, as of that fourth year, we will have a full contingency of students. How much would it cost to be able to support the activities that they themselves have been asking for? So we vetted this through them. We've also sat with student government, I was with Mr. Meeks, to talk about what those things entailed. And first we tried to take a look at how we might be able to leverage the fees that the students already pay to the university, but it's really tangled in terms of, we didn't want a situation where we asked for some of that money back to support some specific activities which would then restrict or limit our students' abilities to participate in the overall university student activities, and so it was just way too messy. And in this way, we could address it in the way that the students felt they needed to be able to be successful.
Thank you.
Just to clarify, we're talking about $15,000 for the year that you'll be bringing in.
Yes.
And that money will be spent on expenses for these professional development.
Wait, I'm sorry, let's back up. $15,000?
That you'll be bringing in.
No, that was the tuition. You're talking about the previous one. This is...
You're charging another $125 per student, and there are 90 students.
Overall, for the entire college, it would be approximately $40,000.
Okay, for the entire college of funds.
Right. So we're not talking about activities just for any one cohort of students. This is all of the students, all 360 of them that are enrolled.
Okay. And the money is actually going to be spent on travel and those kinds of expenses?
It's professionalism activities, it's student enrichment activities, it is...
I'm not sure what you mean by activities. What is the, where is the expense of the activity?
Okay, as an example, we'll have a student group that will be involved in an indigent clinic and some of the support services that are provided there. So the travel, we call it related travel, which allows the students to go back and forth and do those types of things, and also any type of programs that they might put on for the patrons at the clinic. The student organizations, which are supported by the student government then would be able to provide the funding and finances to support those types of things. The vast majority of the activities that the students are engaged in are professional in nature, which help to support their education and growth and development. But they're unable to do a lot of these things because they need the funds. And since all the students participate in this, this is why we chose this route.
In the past, how was this paid for?
In the past, we've done it as best as we could within the parameters of what can be used for, you know, state appropriated funds, right? We ran into some problems over the last year in being able to support some of the student activities, and it made them very frustrated because, again, of how you can use state appropriated dollars versus non-appropriated dollars.
Okay. And you've determined that about $40,000 is what those expenses have been.
That is correct, how much they would be for next year. And again, as I mentioned earlier, with additional financial support for the college to be able to underwrite a number of these things, then we anticipate, maybe not for FY13, but possibly for that next year, that we would take a critical look at being able to either reduce, if not eliminate, this fee.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions regarding the resolution? Is there a motion regarding the resolution?
I make a motion we adopt the resolution.
I move to second the motion.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One final thing before I leave. I know I'm taking up a lot of time. I'll be very brief with this. At the last board meeting, Trustee Scott, you had indicated when I talked about the cash position and the dependency on the state, you had asked that we develop some kind of a plan on addressing this issue. Well, even when you mentioned that, we had already were in the processes of doing that, drafting something, and the president had indicated that we would have something for you. And I just would like to briefly, there's a draft that of something that we have that I just wanted to just show you briefly. If that's what my assistant brought me, actually, when she was here. If you'll allow me. We looked at a 10-year plan, and let me just indicate, can we, up here, 2011. So this very top row for 5 years, this very top row, basically shows in the current fiscal year, 2011, basically what our funding is. There's a state funding there, the $40 million that I talked about. Tuition and fees, we're projecting for FY 2011, almost to match what the state gives us based on our projections. Grants and contracts, dollars that we can use, including indirect costs, $11 million. The alumni
basically our revenue sources that we're looking at. And what we did is that, if you go down here, this column B here I have as declining state dependency. That means that we're projecting in 2011 our state dependency if we do these things here. In 2011, if we increase the amount of our tuition and fees by 5% in 2011, remember we said that we're projecting a 4% increase, so we're saying, well, let's do a little bit better than that. And so, again, this is just a rough draft to show you where we can get the dollars in order to alleviate our dependency on the state dollars. And so we're saying 5% for 2011 and maybe 8% after that. Tuition and fee here is going to be our biggest driver because, you know, that's the largest dollar amount. And again, you can increase our tuition and fees by a number of things, either increasing the rate or increasing your enrollment numbers or a combination of both. So if you go down to the bottom without spending too much time on this, you'll see that our total contributions to address the $40 million for the state for tuition and fees would be about $28.9 million, or 67% of the total to alleviate our dependency on the state. This 20% is the same thing for, and I forgot what that column is at the top, for grants and contracts. And we're saying for grants and contracts, again, 5% increase in 2011, and then 10% thereafter. We have 10% in revenues from grants and contracts. It's going to lead to the 20%. These are pretty conservative numbers, and if you also look at our corporate or foundation, only 2%. And auxiliary services, 11%, and that's what we'll do. And you'll see here that we'll be a little bit by 2021, in 10 years, we would be about a deficit of $3 million. Now, there's a lot of details behind this and things, and this is just a rough draft of what we can look at. And if we wanted to try to do this in 5 years, well, the only thing that we did is just double the numbers for 5 years to come up with the same analysis. But again, just to let you know that, I mean, this is a doable plan, and this is something that we can work with. But even in addition to that, you know, the president presented to me earlier, about a week or so ago, an Oregon model. And the Oregon model basically what the Oregon model does, and it's being utilized, and I guess it's an interesting model. And what they've done is that they've taken their state funding. Their state funding is somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 million, but let's use our analysis for the Oregon approach. Our $40 million that we received from the state, if we held that constant for the next 30 years, let's say, and then we go and we match that with another $40 million, we put that in an endowment, it will generate, according to the Oregon model, in the first year, approximately, if depending on the interest rates, approximately the same amount that we get from the state currently, which is the $40 million. And basically it's just a series of, it's just an endowment that they've set up. They're saying, so they go out and they float bonds with the original $40 million from the state. For example, let's say we've got $40 million, we go out and we float bonds in the neighborhood of somewhere like 800, well they had 800,000, ours would be approximately $400 million. $400 million, we float that for, we get the bonds, and then we match that with contributions from private donors, et cetera, that $40 million. We put all of that in an endowment, and then we just, let's say we have a spending rate on that endowment of about maybe 4% or 3%, we can generate about $40 million. I don't have the numbers, but I can draft those up for you, but it's a very interesting model, and I guess it could work, but there's some parameters there that you have to look at. And I'm only mentioning that to say that we are looking at ways of alleviating our dependency on the state dollars. And so we're looking at the Oregon model, and we've got this model that we can work with as well, and you know, maybe change some of these things around as we move forward. I just wanted to introduce that to you in this draft form, and this is a very broad stroke draft form, just to let you know that we are looking at ways of addressing our dependency on state dollars.
It's good to hear.
Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, trustees, how are you today?
Good.
I'm here to present the audit results for the last quarter. We'll start off with the external audit update in regards to our external auditors and the progress.
Are they still here?
Yes, they are still here. Yes, they are. But they're in the financial audit now. They've pretty much completed the compliance, and they're about 40% through the financial audit. One thing I'd like to start off with, though, and since Mr. Meeks is here, you might want to chime in as well. Yesterday, we met with the Legislative Audit Commission to give them some updates in regards to our fiscal year 09 external audit and how management was making progress in regards to those audit points. It went very well. There was some few questions in regards to some of the repeat findings that we had, and Mr. Meeks did very well in explaining what we had done thus far. They also had questions in regards to employee faculty timesheets, the Siemens litigation that occurred back in 2003, and some of the voucher processing. It went very well. There was just some minimal questions. We thought that we came out of there pretty well in comparison to some of the other agencies that were there yesterday. In regards to the external audit update, like I said before, they are pretty much complete with their compliance audit, and they've started their financial audit. They're about 40% complete there. We have obtained some potential audit findings from them. We've got about 40 thus far. And to premise what a potential audit finding is, this is as basically what it states. It's a potential. It doesn't mean that it's going to equate to an audit finding yet. It's just items that they have identified that could possibly turn into some audit findings. And these could be combined. You could have a number of them combined, and it also depends on their materiality as to whether or not it could turn into an audit finding, a final. So right now, we believe that most of those are immaterial. A lot of those occurred prior to the current administration, as well as some of the initiatives that CSU has undertaken in regards to IT implementations, for example, CSU Buy, People Admin, and other efficiencies that we have put into place in terms of our processes. One of the other things I'd like to just mention briefly is that we have created an audit liaison position. This individual is going to be sole responsibility is going to be liaison with the external auditors to try and help streamline the process for next year. We've had this individual working with the external auditors for the last month or so. They've come up and stepped up to the plate and said that he's done a pretty decent job. This is an attempt to be able to streamline the whole process next year, make sure that we have proper communication, we have deadlines and such that we're held accountable, as well as they are to the externals in terms of communication with us. So we believe that this could really help us next year in regards to decreasing the time that they spend here at the university. Okay, if we go to page 4 on my update, we'll start off with the internal audit updates. One of the things that Trustee Scott and I had discussed a little while back was reevaluating the current plan that was in place. If you remember, when I first came in June, I had about 2.5 weeks to prepare a 2-year internal audit plan without very much information. So at this point in time, now that I've been here for 5 or 6 months, we both thought it would be economical if I was to take a look at the current plan and revise it, and also look at the staffing levels and what would be needed in regards to the execution of that plan. That is currently underway. I project that I will have a draft revision probably first week of January, right after the holiday season. Just to go over some of the completed projects that we had in quarter two, we did a special project in regards to the external audit process, which was one of those audit points was the development of this audit liaison type of a position. We also provided some consulting around numerous areas that the administration management had asked us to do. I was outside the internal audit plan. In terms of some other completed audits that we did, we also did a full audit of the police services and parking area, and we have a draft report out on that right now. We're just waiting for some responses from them, and we anticipate that to be put out in a couple of weeks or so. Current audits that we have in progress right now, we're in the middle of doing tone at the top, governance, risk, and compliance audit. We're also in the middle of doing a sponsored programs audit, and we've just completed an employee travel expenditures audit. Management asked us, this was over and above the plan, management asked us to look at the process and see if we could come up with any potential enhancements. On page five, if you go to the future quarter two audits, I've listed, we've just started a student's account receivable audit. We just had our first introductory meeting with management in regards to that, so we're in our planning and stages on that. In terms of quarter three, I listed some of the audit projects that we have currently on our plan, but again, due to the possible plan revision, I'm going to premise this by saying all these are subject to change at this point in time. So we're not exactly sure where we're going to go, other than I know that the banner system upgrade, that's going to stay on the plan, but we're just not sure of the timing on that yet. And C. Cole might be able to provide that later on in her discussion. In terms of other items, one of the things that we've been doing in the last couple of months is trying to get involved in some of the committees to be able to provide, you know, listen to what's going on in the committees, be able to provide some consulting around some of the internal controls that might be in discussion, or just any insight that we might be able to provide in terms of data analysis or whatnot that auditors would typically look at to be able to provide them some, you know, provide management some more detail or enhancement there. Another item that's coming up, and this is going to start in quarter three, is all state universities are required to go through a quality assurance review of their internal audit department. This is governed by the State Internal Audit Advisory Board. This is going to start probably February or so. I got to start completion of paperwork and arranging for the individual or individuals who are going to come in and do that review. Probably next quarter I'll have a little bit better of an update as to where we are on that progress. On page six, some of the key performance indicators that we're looking at, one of them is when we complete an audit, we put out a survey to individuals asking them about how we did. And we've gotten a few back, and there's a synopsis here, and most of the comments that we are getting back is agree or strongly agree that we're doing our job effectively and efficiently. In terms of the